I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Are progressives on the move in Maryland? Former NAACP head Ben Jealous won big last night. He presents Maryland voters with an alternative to Republican Governor Larry Hogan that couldn't be more pronounced. In Baltimore County, progressive former delegate Johnny Olszewski has a razor-thin lead in a three-way race that won't be decided anytime soon. And several state senators from Baltimore City to Southern Maryland will not be returning to Annapolis in January, defeated by often younger politicians who lean left. To quote the classic movie A Mighty Wind, what happened? WBAL-TV's Jane Miller and the Baltimore Sun's Andy Green have analysis when Midday starts right after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. In the end, the race to become the Democratic nominee for governor wasn't very close. Ben Jealous won every single county in Maryland except Prince George's, the home base of County Executive Rashern Baker, and Calvert County, which Jealous lost by 48 votes. The former head of the NAACP enters the general election with momentum, but not nearly as much money as Republican incumbent Larry Hogan. In Baltimore County, it couldn't be more close. Three Democrats, former Delegate Johnny Olszewski Jr., Senator Jim Brochin, and County Councilwoman Vicki Allman, are within a few hundred votes of each other in a race that won't be settled until next week at the earliest. On the Republican side, Maryland Insurance Commissioner Al Redmer beat Delegate Pat McDonough by 10 points. McDonough has said that this will be his last campaign. Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby won by 50% of the vote in one of the most acrimonious races in this campaign season. And while Senate President Mike Miller won his race with 70% of the vote, his working life will be somewhat different when the General Assembly. Yeah, Joe Crowley expected by many to be perhaps the next Speaker of the House if the Democrats were to take over the majority.
But when I say, but in the cases what you're mentioning about the state Senate candidates, those are long-term incumbents. And they were beaten not by people who are coming like insurgents, but people from the House of Delegates that are moving up. These are somewhat established politicians in those districts that have chosen
less
to challenge.
So in the Middleton case,
In that case, yes, that's correct. In Southern Maryland.
Yeah, Andy, tell us about the man who beat Mac Middleton.
I mean, I'm not an expert in him, but, you know, he's not really in the mold of this.
This is Arthur Ellis is his name, I guess, right?
He refers to himself on a website as a progressive Democrat, but this is not a Bernie clone down in Southern Maryland. He's not an unknown figure there. He's been involved in, you know, local political and education circles down there for a while. And so, you know, he's not quite in the same mold as, say, an Antonio Hayes or a Corey McCray, you know, these really young, ambitious, pretty progressive folks taking on sitting Senator Mary Washington, same situation, Delegate Mary Washington taking on Joan Carter Conway in Baltimore. Those are more sort of purely in the theme of progressives taking on the establishment. This was more, I think, just a case of, you know, people want something new after a time. But, you know, you're right about Mike Miller's life being very different. You know, if Joan Carter Conway loses, three out of the four people sitting in the front row of the Senate, the committee chairs, are going to be different next year.
And Mike Miller is no progressive, that's for sure.
Yeah.
And so if the party is leaning left and you know, starting to become more progressive, does that make the chickens harder to
Well, Mike Miller has drifted left over the years a little bit. He is eminently adaptable and good at understanding where the caucus sits and managing to stay in control of it. You know, this is a guy who, you know, has a sort of
vigorously she'll work because she wants to still play nice with Larry Hogan, whose chances of winning are, you know, let's face it, pretty
good.
And
that race is already out of the gate, big time.
Yeah. No, the Hogan campaign released a video for our edification this morning, sent it to us, you know, before 9 o'clock this morning.
Yes.
Introducing.
And a couple of emails last night, too.
Yeah, even last night. Introducing Ben Jealous.
Yes.
So for a minute and 40 seconds, they introduce this, you know, tax and spend liberal.
In very, very flattering terms.
Terms. And boy, the hues and the tones, the sepia tones they used.
And this is going to get national play, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, no, the Hogan media team is excellent. They know what they're doing.
This video was clearly produced a month ago.
Oh, you know,
and they had one for Baker. They had one for Jealous. Sure. They may have even had one for Jim Shea for all.
Yeah, they obviously had some new footage because Jealous doesn't have his goatee in the pictures.
That's right.
He's recently shaved that off.
Right.
But yeah, they clearly knew what they were doing.
Oh, that's a good catch, Andy. That's a good catch.
Thank you.
Very good. Jane Miller and Andy Green are with me. We're talking about the election last night. Some really big surprises and some things not so surprising. Jane, I wonder, with Jealous's pitch that he can widen the pool, that he can increase voter engagement. He does pitch that.
Yes.
Yeah, it reminds me of the pitch that Stacey Abrams made to Georgia voters saying, I'm not going to worry about getting Trump Republicans to switch over and vote for me. Forget those folks. We'll just write them off, and I'm going to engage new people who are either not registered or who are registered and not voting. That may have been a persuasive argument to a lot of people when it comes to taking on a governor who's incredibly popular.
Well, I think that if we look at the numbers, and I haven't looked at the percentage turnout, et cetera, in 2014, which was like the lowest primary turnout in, I don't know, 40 years or something like that, or more than that. If you look at 2014, there were just over 700,000 people that voted in the primary in Maryland. And this year, just preliminary, and this is
Hogan, we were interested in which Democrat presents voters with the clearest choice. Because, you know, Maryland is a very Democratic state typically, but not always a liberal state, per
Correct.
Se.
I would absolutely agree.
And so I think this election gives the state a really good opportunity to say, here's the direction we want. Are we this center-left state, or are we turning into a progressive state? And I think this gives us a great chance to answer that question.
And how does Ben Jealous respond to Mr. Hogan's attack, which started last year? He's a radical
extremist.
The single-payer health system that he's proposing didn't work in Vermont, didn't work in Colorado, didn't work in California. He's a tax and spend liberal. And the people he has saying those things are people like Jim Shea and Rashern Baker.
During the campaign. Yes.
You know, and that's always the danger that you run into on either party when you're running in a primary and you're trashing people who ultimately you're going to have to support because only one person can win.
Well, I know that the main themes of the Jealous campaign is going to deal with taxes. And, you know, that
which he's already proposed raising for top 1%
of
earners.
But also to go after Hogan for promising to lower them and has not necessarily happened in all cases. But
He hasn't really even tried.
Right. There's been some fee adjustment. But yes. But I think the other thing that you're going to see is I think a pretty aggressive attack by the Jealous campaign on the idea that, okay, yeah, you're popular. But what have you done with that popularity? That's what I get from them is that they're really going to go after the kind of lack of effort. I think the biggest takeaway for me from last night, when you look at the Baltimore County executive race, and you look at the governor's race, the Democratic nominee race, the biggest takeaway for me was the importance of education. Johnny Olushewski in Baltimore County's ad, his team.
WIPR, and you can also catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. So let's pick up and talk a little bit more about the governor and the power of incumbency. He did send out a press release on the 21st, so it was about a week ago, announcing $18.6 million for Kerwin Commission recommendation education initiatives. The Kerwin Commission, of course, hasn't made its final recommendations. Right. They won't do that until sometime, Lord knows when.
Probably prior to the election.
Yeah.
Soon,
right.
I'm hoping.
Yeah,
that's
soon.
Right.
But they were hoping to have it out before the last legislative session started. So in this press release, we have verbs like, you know, the governor provided, the governor authorized an additional. And this is all, as I understand it, and I've talked to people who understand the budget quite well in Annapolis, this is all stuff that the legislature has already allocated, but he makes it sound
in the press release
in the fine print.
They use a phrase that indicates that this is what the legislature had authorized, and he's now releasing the funds.
Yeah, and I think that's really that's what it is, that the legislature can allocate it, but the governor can decide not to release
it. That's right.
They can essentially fence off funds and say, if you want to spend this money, you can only spend it on X, and so
So the governor's choice here is to either release it or not.
Yeah.
He has chosen to release it.
Correct.
And he's taken credit for
releasing
sort
it.
Of inventing
but
it.
This
in
is
a way.
Sort of part of a bigger dynamic of what's going on or has been going on in Annapolis is that on a lot of different issues, you know, in healthcare, in education, in you name it, Governor Hogan has really adopted or gone along with many, many items in the Democratic agenda. You know, for example, the lockbox education proposal to say we're going to put casino money in some lockbox, which is different from the lockbox we have now. That was a Democratic idea. He jumped on it and, you know, is essentially now running on it. And this just drives Democrats in Annapolis nuts. They can't stand it. They just can't get answer to that in November. But
stay tuned, Jim.
That's a really good question.
Until November, yeah. Because I mean, this is the thing. Does Jealous need to win over moderates? You know, because Mr. Hogan certainly is in a lot of people's estimation the sort of paradigmatic moderate. I mean, he certainly has done a very good job distancing himself from President Trump.
Right.
You know, you see what happens, although, you know, and in Baltimore County, which we want to switch to now, interesting that Johnny O has a razor-thin lead at the moment. Now, the three of them, nobody really has a lead.
Right.
I mean, this is tied.
No, right.
You know, but here's Johnny O, who comes from a very conservative part of the county.
Right.
Dundalk.
But Dundalk. Right. And, you know, this is a place where Pat McDonough did better than Al Redmer last night. But Johnny O did very well there. He did very well in Randallstown. He did very well throughout the county. You know, he was not expected to do nearly as well before, you know, a few days before the election. So you had Brochin and Jim Brochin, the state senator, and Vicky Allman, a councilwoman, attacking each other on, of all things, gun control. And there's Johnny right. O, who really ran a very positive campaign. And look, they're all three of them tied.
Yeah, I mean, as much as I would like to say that it was all the Sun endorsement of Johnny O that put him over the top, there are some other things at work here. I mean, you're right. The campaign between Jim Brochin and Vicky Allman turned pretty nasty at the end. And in particular, I think the late surge of money into the Allman campaign from developer interests was not helpful to her in the end. It played right into Jim Brochin's campaign saying developers run the show in Baltimore County. I think that, you know, prevented her, you know, a really well-established figure in the county from doing better than she did.
You're broadening her base, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then with Johnny O, I think there was definitely symbiosis between him and the Jealous campaign. You know, the Jealous campaign did very, very well in Baltimore County. It was their biggest margin of victory. His margin of victory there was bigger than Rashern Baker's was in Prince George's. So he and Johnny O were, I think, turning out the same voters, which means that it would be very helpful to Jealous if Johnny O is the nominee in the fall. That, you know, it's good to have all
the coattails can work.
Direction.
Yeah, right.
Similarly,
the
with,
same way.
With Governor Hogan and Al Redmer, you know, to have all oars rowing in the same direction is going to be helpful to him. So I think that was going on too. And, you know, generally, I think you're right. He ran a positive campaign. He had good media. He raised the money. He had a good ground game. You know, I think in forums and live appearances, of which he and the other candidates did a lot, he came across as, you know, a thoughtful, articulate guy who is, you know, taking some time to figure out where he stands on the issues, how he's going to express himself. And he came across as, you know, much more mature than he could be as the by far youngest person in that race.
So Jay Miller, Democrats made a calculation that perhaps Ben Jealous is best positioned to beat Larry Hogan. We'll find out whether that's true.
I think that's probably correct.
In Baltimore County, which of the three candidates there strikes you as the best positioned to beat Al Redmer, who is a Hogan, he's the person that Governor Hogan has endorsed. But as Andy says, I mean, if the oars are rowing in the same direction, if you got a Ben Jealous
Hogan
at the
is
top,
very popular in
and,
Baltimore County.
And you've got a Johnny right. O as the county executive nominee, is he better positioned because of Ben Jealous? Is he better positioned to beat Al Redmer than Senator Brochin or Councilwoman Allman?
You know, I did a story in December of 2016 after the presidential election in the 12 or 13 precincts of Dundalk. And at, and the 2016 election turned all of them red except Turner Station, which is the African-American precinct in that area. And Johnny O, at that time, he was definitely thinking about running for county executive at that time, but he was in the peak.
Barry Hogan won there in 2014. Kevin Kamenetz.
Obama
cruised,
won there.
Yeah, you know, Obama won there. Yeah. Right. It's just a very particular thing about Bob Ehrlich, native son of Baltimore County, Larry Hogan, who is sort of in the Ehrlich mold, but, you know, I think at this point we can say a more skilled politician than Bob Ehrlich, was able to capture that same magic again. Now, will the conditions be the same in 2018? You know, we'll have to see. Yeah. But, you know, it's interesting to note that Ben Jealous was also extremely strong there.
Here's a question about the 41st delegate race. Sandy Rosenberg retained
this
his seat.
Right.
He had a tough run, too. Mm-hmm. He won again. But newcomers, Dahlia Attar and mm-hmm. Tony Bridges, yep. will take the place of Angela Gibson and Bilal Ali. They were appointed incumbents. This is an email from Claudia. What do you make of that race? Of course, this is the 41st district.
That's also
is
the
senatorial
Senate,
district,
right.
where Joe Matt P. Oaks. Carter was
defeated
and been appointed to replace Nat Oaks for the remainder of his term, and she defeated J.D. Merrill, the son-in-law of Martin O'Malley.
Well, you know, Dahlia Attar ran a very, very intensive campaign over there. She had a ton of I live in that district, a ton of mail. Signs everywhere. She has really strong support in the Orthodox Jewish community. And, you know, that's obviously a big vote in that district. And so it's not surprising to see her succeed. You know, Tony Bridges also, you know, again, we endorsed him. So, you know, I'll take credit for that, too. But he also ran a strong campaign, had a lot of good mail, you know, the fundamental stuff you get in over there. And, you know, I think that, you know, Bilal Ali, very much a newcomer, had just been appointed. Angela Gibson was on Sandy Rosenberg's ticket, but, you know, he wasn't able to, you know, I think at this point there's a shift going on in that district, and he had enough name recognition to stay, but not coattails to help someone else.
We're going to take a break. We will come back and have more analysis with Jane Miller. She's the lead investigative reporter at WPIV, where they be to my citizen concerns. So I'm a solid Democrat, but I'm going with Hogan. Mr. Hogan is making that argument that he's got not only Republican support in places, you know, well outside of Baltimore, Southern Maryland, Western Maryland, Eastern Shore, but he's got a lot of Democrats here in the Baltimore and the contiguous counties that are with him.
Yeah. You know, to the question of why is he so popular in a Democratic state, I mean, I think it's he has cultivated a very strong brand for himself as somebody who is apolitical, that he is willing to work with anybody, that, you know, certainly in the last few years, he has been very disciplined about not getting in fights with Democrats if he can avoid it.
You know, he doesn't get involved in social issues.
Yep, nope, does not touch.
He doesn't get involved in his wedge issues a lot.
No, nothing to do with abortion, gay rights.
Nope.
The only time,
alone,
the only time he weighed into gun control was this year, was to advocate for gun control.
Yeah, correct.
Which was mind blowing.
Yeah, he banned fracking. You know,
he's better on the environment than people thought he was going to be. You know, certainly your environmental advocates have bones to pick with him, but if you had asked them 4 years ago, will you be happy if Governor Hogan bans fracking and does this and that, they would have thought, wow, that's pretty great. So he has, and he has been very adroit, as we alluded to earlier, in terms of not aligning himself with President Trump. In fact, the more people try to pin him to Mr. Trump, the more opportunities he has.
And it does seem like Ben Jealous is going to make that play. He's going to try to, you know, Governor Hogan's lapel
go after
to Mr.
on
Trump.
Issues of healthcare, education. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be really that's what's going to define this race.
Here's part of what Ben Jealous had to say last night.
And Mr. Hogan, Larry, you have aided and abetted Trump when you stood shoulder to shoulder with Attorney General Sessions.
Yeah, and that ticket, whether if you voted for the Kamenetz ticket, it counted as a vote for Valerie Irvin and Marisol Johnson, who dropped out of the race.
Yeah,
and they garnered almost 18,000 votes.
Yeah. You know, I think in Baltimore City, for example, I think 296 precincts or whatever
it's
the number
ridiculous.
Is, 308, it's outrageous. Some of those precincts only have a couple dozen voters. I was talking to the mayor about this last night. They operate their early voting centers pretty efficiently. Mm-hmm. We don't seem to have, but those are bigger. They have more people involved. I think we really need to look at how we conduct these elections. First of all, more and more people are early voting, so they clearly prefer
an
opportunity.
That graph
over,
is going north
over time. We went through all this stuff to get away from electronic voting to go to paper voting because of the fear of hacking and. I don't know what's worse at this point, in terms of the inefficiency of the system we seem to have.
Yeah, one of our writers makes the point that you can't do a write-in ballot when you've got a pencil or a pen in your hand and you're marking up a piece of paper to vote, but you still can't write in anybody.
Yeah, it's a really archaic process.
John Willis was with me last night, former Secretary of State, knows a lot about elections, and he says basically that's what's going to happen eventually. He just doesn't know when. It's going to be difficult. Now, how about, on the other hand, the state of Maryland gets a pat on the back for doing what they can. The legislature has been much more progressive than legislatures in other states about making voting more easier and more accessible.
I mean, we're not all the way there. There are other
same-day registration when you're early vote,
kind
of stuff.
We don't have that.
And then they try to make it easier by going to the MVA to change your registration or change your address.
Right.
And they screwed that up. So there are 80,000 potential provisional votes out there. But Andy Green, when are we going to even know how many people actually did cast provisional ballots? I understand the last time around, there were 17,000 provisional ballots cast then. So, I mean, does that serve as a marker for what we might find this time?
Well, we really don't know. We're supposed to find out on Friday how many ballots there are out there. They're supposed to start counting them, revolving door of police commissioners, massive corruption scandals, post Freddie Gray unrest, the consent decree from the federal government. All of this chaos is going on. And, I am the one trying to pick up the pieces. And so we have maintained a strong conviction rate. We have had to drop more cases because the cases we're getting are bad. But, we're working with what we've got here. And, that was reasonably convincing. But what this race is really about to a fundamental degree is it's a Rorschach test on how you feel about how she handled the prosecution of the officers in the Freddie Gray case. And there are a lot of people in this town, apparently approximately 50% of them, who
patted her on the back for saying, at least you tried.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And then there are others who take completely the opposite view. I think what I hope is that this election allows us the opportunity to get past that question. We have now rendered judgment on that. Let's stop viewing everything through the lens of what she did 3 years ago and look at the lens of what she and everybody else is doing.
We have a caller who I don't have time to take her call, but she wants to talk about Mary Washington and Senator Joan Carter Conway.
Go ahead.
The race hasn't been called. Mary Washington is up by about 570 votes.
It's not as close as would it require,
So, does it seem possible? I suppose it's possible, but, how likely would you judge it to be that with provisional and absentee ballots counted, Senator Joan Carter Conway can recover, nearly 600
Maybe,
votes?
Maybe, but,
probably not. I think
I don't
if
know.
You
absentee
say
sometimes in a race like that. Mary Washington clearly benefited, my opinion, from Ben Jealous. I mean, again,
it's part of the progressive wave. Yeah.
Correct.
And also,
right.
She in her own right is an excellent candidate. This was one of those races.
She's a great
campaigner.
And
she's in the House of Delegates, so she's not on
the campaigner. That's right.
Correct.
This was one of those races we had a hard time deciding which candidate to endorse.
Joan's got a lot of power. She has wields a lot of power.
Yeah, and she made the case that, if she's booted, then, all with Mark Elrich for Montgomery County Executive, Mr. Elrich declaring himself to be a socialist. This is definitely part of the progressive wave.
Right.
So we will keep an eye on all of it.
There's a lot to talk about that we can't talk about today with any kind of
definition.
Just don't know. We don't know.
But we will know at some point, and we'll have you back, and we'll talk more. Appreciate it. It's good to see you both. Jane Miller is an award-winning lead investigative reporter at WBAL Television. Andy Green the editorial page editor of the Baltimore Sun. Lunch today was provided by Dangerously Delicious Pies. They've got locations at 2839 O'Donnell Street on the Square in Canton and at 810 West 36th Street in Hamden. Their menu includes a large variety of homemade sweet and savory pies and quiches. Got more information on the web at dangerouspiesbalt.com. That's it for us today. Coming up tomorrow, it's the Midday Health Watch with Baltimore City Health Commissioner Dr. Lena Wen. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Cockpit in Court's production of Avenue Q. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for listening. Thanks for voting. Have a great day.